Welcome back to Light on Conspiracies, the second part for subscribers only.
I'm here with my good friend Mark Devon, who is an outstanding researcher in the music field. He's a former DJ, or still a DJ, but who has been touring all over the world to some 40 countries and has some incredible insight in the music business from the inside. And in this second hour, I would very much like if maybe we can go into some details around what is actually hidden in some of these videos that we see now on a daily basis, and also the dangers for our children to see this, because it might seem harmless, but once you start understanding what is actually being presented in front of your eyes and the eyes of your children, it's mind-blowing, in my opinion. So please, Mark, take us on a tour wherever you want to go.
Okay, well, some recent examples from the past few years would be, let me talk about the video to EXO by Beyoncé, and also the video to Get Her Back by Robin Thicke. And people might think, well, what's the connection between those two videos? Well, the connection is that at a very specific point in each of these videos, if you very quickly do a freeze frame, because it's only on screen for a fraction of a second, for absolutely no ostensible reason, there is a demonic entity that appears in these videos. There are stills of them available online, and I've shown slides of them before, where you can see the point in the video where you just get this demonic entity flashed up on screen for a split second. It's a classic subliminal. So it's absorbed straight into the subconscious mind of the viewing public. And unless you're being extremely vigilant, you have no idea that it's been there. And I mentioned to you that I attended a talk recently by a guy called Carl James, talking about the dark side of Disney. And he was talking about all the subliminals that have gone into Disney cartoons and films over the years, which is part of the same process. And the common point with all these things is that they're aimed at young people. And when you start looking at videos from the likes of Lady Gaga, Rihanna, Katy Perry, Taylor Swift, people like that, they're aimed at children and usually young girls. So that's the target of all this subliminal programming. They're trying to get into the minds of young people and place this stuff into their consciousness. Why are there demonic entities in these videos? There's absolutely no reason for them to be there. Another trend that's been happening big time in recent years is the normalization of transhumanism, the transhumanist state, which society is being led towards by the day at an ever-increasing pace. And I'm very, very alarmed by what waits around the corner for us if this particular agenda is allowed to go on unchecked. Transhumanism is an absolute nightmare scenario. It's the merging of humanity and technology, man and machine. And it's on the elite controller's wish list to basically make us less than human. There's lots of different interpretations put on it. You know, some people seem to think that the idea is upgrading humanity to the next level and taking us to another level of consciousness. But I don't see it that way. That may well be the plan that these psychopaths have for themselves, because in their own minds, they see themselves as gods and they see themselves as being able to make their own creation, alter the creation that is already here, that has been put into place by the God of creation, and to become their own gods and supersede that and create their own version of it. And I think transhumanism is a part of that in their own sick, twisted mindset. But for the rest of us, you know, us serfs, us great unwashed, us masses, us profane ones, the plan that they have for us is to turn us all into friggin' robots. And we see this in so many ways. You know, microchips are becoming more and more common. There are certain companies now, certain workplaces where staff are being required to take a microchip under their wrist to be able to do things like operate elevators, open doors, operate office equipment, that sort of thing. Then we're getting things like iris scans, you know, biometrics, fingerprinting is being used in regular corporate workplaces. They're normalizing this stuff. They're getting people used to this idea of merging humanity with technology. And just look at the society that we live in now, where everyone is glued to their smartphone screen all day long. Everything you could ever want to do, you can do on this device that you take around with you. You're connected to the internet 24/7. you're being surveilled the whole time. We've got things like smart cities. In the UK, Glasgow has recently become the first smart city, where everything around, all the street furniture, all the lampposts, all the buildings, are all linked by massive Wi-Fi networks, and they're all communicating data to each other. And at the same time, people are being spied on, conversations are being listened into, you're on camera the whole bloody time. And this is the blueprint for the way they want society to be. And we can see it being slow dripped in the whole time. So this is a long-winded way of me saying that so much of this imagery has been fed into music videos in recent years. So you've seen artists like will.i.am particularly, and Black Eyed Peas, who are major culprits when it comes to normalizing transhumanism. They're frequently being depicted as cyborgs or androids in their own right. At the same time, in so many music videos, you've seen RoboCop type cyborgs, you know, these black cop type entities straight out of an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, dancing in these music videos and interacting with the artists. And often the videos take place in some kind of dystopian 1984 style future society, where you've got the very police surveillance state that I was talking about. But it's all done in this glossy, fun music video to get it into the minds of young people and to normalize it, so that when this stuff starts to be unfolded bit by bit as the years go on, there's already a familiarity with the scenario in the minds of the collective masses, because they've seen it depicted in music videos and in Hollywood movies. So that's an agenda that's been going into music videos big time in recent years. But a very interesting thing for me in researching the book that I'm currently doing has been looking back at British pop videos of the early 1980s and looking at some of the symbolism that was contained in those. So in my first book, I've gone into mind control symbolism, and I've drawn a lot on the articles that people can find at a website called vigilantcitizen.com. So Vigilant Citizen specializes in breaking down all this symbolism and this occult imagery that you get in music videos and movies and advertising, and he tells you what it means. So very specifically, when it comes to trauma-based mind control, MKUltra, monic programming, you get things like dolls. You frequently see Barbie dolls or humans portrayed as dolls. They often have pink hair. They often have mutilated limbs, like arms or legs missing. You see teddy bears everywhere. You see broken mirrors everywhere. You see Mickey Mouse ears. All this stuff relates back to satanic ritual abuse and trauma-based mind control. And when you see any of these icons or these motifs in a pop video, that's what they're subliminally communicating to the viewing general public. So in my book and on the Vigilant Citizen articles, you can find details of videos from the likes of Nicki Minaj, Katy Perry, Kanye West, Rihanna, Beyonce, all the usual suspects of this current era. And you see all these things, such as Nicki Minaj frequently being depicted as a Barbie doll. It's even her nickname, Barbs, with pink hair, you know. But I was very surprised when I started doing the research to find that these exact same motifs crop up in so many British pop videos of the early 1980s. So this tells you that it's not just an agenda that's been taking place in the United States in the last 10 years, but that it's been absolutely in place on this side of the Atlantic in the UK, and it goes back to previous decades. So it's not something that's just limited to the 2000s. There are many, many examples of it from the early 1980s. Now, who was paying attention to this stuff in the 1980s? Who even knew what to look for? So it's fascinating now to look back with fresh eyes, having understood what this symbolism means, and finding it cropping up in videos from 1980, 1981, and realizing it was right there in plain sight the whole time. And these millions of people that watched Top of the Pops in the UK back in the 1980s and saw these videos from Duran Duran or whoever else it might be, were absorbing all this imagery into their subconscious mind, but having no idea what it meant. It's only now that we can discover it. So I'm listing in this new book a bunch of 80s pop videos where I've seen all this stuff crop up. And I'll give you a couple of examples that people might want to go and check out. So you can get the official videos to these songs on YouTube. You can watch them anytime you want. One would be Adam and the Ants. Okay, there was a big number one hit by Adam and the Ants called Prince Charming in 1981. Look at the video with the benefit of having studied what some of this symbolism means. And it's an absolute Masonic occult mind control symbol fest. You know, part of it takes part in a Masonic temple, for God's sake, with a black and white checkerboard duality floor. You've got expressions of dissociation from reality. You've got expressions of multiple personality disorder, all of which are symptoms of trauma-based mind control. And in the video, you've got a cameo from Diana Dawes, who was a British actress from the 1950s and 1960s. She was a blonde sex symbol. And in her heyday, she was pretty much the UK Marilyn Monroe, in very much the same image as Marilyn Monroe. And when you get into study of beta sex kitten programming, sex slave programming, you find that that look, that blonde bombshell sexy kind of look with the bleach blonde hair, very much ties into that aspect of mind control. So isn't it interesting that Diana Dawes crops up making a cameo in this video? And it's also very intriguing to consider the background of Adam Ant himself, real name Stuart Goddard, because it's on public record and it's been understood by the general public for years that this guy has suffered from mental illness for all his life, and he has bipolar disorder. So he's done interviews where he's talked about it, and it's common knowledge that Adam Ant is a sufferer of bipolar disorder. But there is another possible explanation for his mental state, which is that he may have been the subject of mind control programming himself in preparation for his role as a music artist. I can't prove that, so I'm not definitely stating that it's the case, but I'm stating that it's a possibility. And his case is very reminiscent to me of an earlier situation with the original frontman of Pink Floyd. So when Pink Floyd first emerged in the 60s, in the midst of that whole psychedelic era that was going on, the singer was Syd Barrett. And Syd Barrett only lasted in Pink Floyd for a couple of years. After that, his mental state was so deteriorated that he was no longer able to continue, and he was kicked out of the band, and he faded into the background, into obscurity. And the official story there is that he'd been doing so much LSD and probably other hallucinogenic drugs that it had fried his brain, and he could no longer function on a regular level. But it becomes interesting when you look at the father of Syd Barrett, surprise, surprise, Max Barrett, who was a scientist, who was a pathologist, and I forget his other job titles, but he worked for Cambridge University on behalf of research for the British government. And part of his research involved studying the effects of LSD on the human mind. And Cambridge University, along with Oxford, is known as being a hotbed of military intelligence activity. It's a breeding ground for a lot of intel agents. It's referred to as a spook school, you know, in the same way that Harvard and Yale in the US are. So you've got Syd Barrett's dad connected to LSD research and pathology on behalf of Cambridge University, connected into the British government. And his son, Syd, just happens to go a bit crazy and has to be kicked out of the group. And then, you know, a couple of decades later, you have Adam Ant, who we're told has bipolar disorder and, you know, is a bit crazy. And yet in his pop video, you've got Masonic imagery, you've got mind control imagery bashing you over the head with a baseball bat. It couldn't be more blatant than in that video. So I would suggest there could be more going on than meets the eye. The other 80s video that I'll mention is one that did crop up in the first volume of my book, and it's from Duran Duran. And the more I look into it and the more I see the symbolism in so many Duran Duran videos, it seems they were a major asset of the establishment in the 1980s. They were like the Beatles, I guess, of the early 80s. They were the prominent group. In the 60s, where you had the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, in the early 80s, you had Duran Duran and Spandau Ballet coming out of the UK, who were pitched as rivals to each other. But Duran Duran, I think, were the key asset. So you got this video to their song Union of the Snake, which is an interesting title before you even get into the imagery. And when you look at the video, it starts off in a remote desert location that looks very similar to Nevada, where we're told the Area 51 deep underground military base, the secret military installation, is. So you have the group driving out into the desert, and on the sand dunes, you have these kind of lizards reptilian hybrid type beings that are crawling around. And, you know, anyone that's read David Icke's books will find that quite interesting. Then you have a bellhop, like an elevator attendant that appears out of nowhere. And this bellhop beckons the group to go into this elevator that descends many, many levels below the desert ground into a deep underground military base. And in this place, you've got black and white Masonic duality checkerboard designs. You've got jugglers who are exhibiting signs of mind control triggers when you look into that whole stuff. You've got children being kept in cages. You've got more of these reptilian lizard type creatures and half human, half animal hybrids in this place. And you've got to ask yourself, what the hell is going on? And all the time, the thing is called Union of the Snake. And on the record sleeve to the vinyl, for good measure, you have a Masonic all-seeing eye just completing the picture. So there's a couple of interesting videos that people might want to look at. Adam and the Ants, Prince Charming, 1981. Duran Duran, Union of the Snake, 1983. While you're there, take a look at Duran Duran's Wild Boys video from 1984 as well, because there's more of the same there. But what are the chances of these same symbols cropping up in videos from the 1980s as we now get in the current glut of mind-controlling garbage pop videos of the current time? It becomes clear this agenda has been going on for a very, very long time, and it knows no boundaries. I'm sure if you looked into pop videos from other countries, probably the Korean pop industry and the Japanese pop industry, you would see it big time there as well. Mm. Very, very deep.
I tell you, since I'm very much trying to expose false flag operations, what I found out is that when I go back, I mean, I thought this was sort of like a kind of a new thing, but it's not. It's been going on for such a long time. So many so-called historical events that we've been told happen in a certain way, when you really start looking into the facts, well, there's another one and another. So it's a process of unlearning all the time while learning new stuff. It's a confusing experience sometimes. But can I ask you, Mark, when you look at the Super Bowl opening and so on, the big, big concerts, I mean, that is the biggest thing in the US and so on. It's so packed with Masonic symbolism and rituals and so on. Can you give me one good reason, natural reason, why there would be any symbols in a place like that if it was not from a dark agenda? What would be the purpose? I for one cannot see it.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, there would be no reasonable explanation for it. But in the same way as you have people saying these military intelligence links to these musicians mean nothing, it's just the way it goes, it's just a career, and these fathers just happen to work in these industries and there's nothing to it, people will often claim that the reason you get Masonic and dark occult and mind control and mystery school esoteric symbolism in things like the US Super Bowl show and the Grammy Awards and stuff like that is that it's just the creators of these events and the management of the artists trying to be controversial and trying to get noticed. That's what people will claim, because it's become very trendy in recent years for people to talk about the Illuminati. There's an awareness now, I think, in public society that there is at least the notion of this secretive society called the Illuminati. And the books of Dan Brown that came out, you know, Angels and Demons and the Da Vinci Code, I think helped to reinforce in the minds of the general public the idea that there are secret societies operating in our midst. But those books, in my view, kind of romanticized them and contained a great deal of misinformation to lead people off down the garden path in terms of what the Illuminati and these other secret societies really represent. But there's been a cachet of cool in the last few years of people referencing the Illuminati and making out they know what this is all about. And you hear people make claims like, oh, Jay-Z's in the Illuminati, Kanye West's in the Illuminati. They're absolutely not, you know. If there is such an organization as the Illuminati, which I see more as a catch-all generic term for these networks of secret societies, but if there ever were a singular organization called the Illuminati, Jay-Z and Kanye West and Beyonce and people like that would not be in the upper levels of it. As I mentioned earlier, these artists are foot soldiers and stooges and are being used as tools of those that are really in the know and are really pulling the strings. But in the same way that in the world of hip hop, for many years, it was cool for rappers and hip hop heads to reference things like Tony Montana out of Scarface, the Scarface movie, El Pacino. Endless references to that in hip hop lyrics. And rappers will identify themselves with the character of Tony Montana, this big time drug pusher, you know. And then you had references to The Godfather. You'd hear Don Corleone getting called out in rap records. And the same thing with King of New York, Christopher Walken in that movie, Frank White. There were endless references to these people in hip hop. And in recent years, you've stopped hearing about Scarface and The Godfather and The King of New York. And now you hear rappers calling out the Illuminati. And you have people like Rick Ross and Jay-Z claiming that they're Freemasons and claiming that they're part of these secret societies. So that's become the new call. It's become trendy for people to talk about the Illuminati, to make out that they're down with the program. They know what it's all about. And people now attach that to things like these big Super Bowl and Grammy stage shows. And they say, oh, it's just the record companies and those that control these artists putting this imagery out there because they know it gets it talked about. They know young people pay attention. Well, to my mind, that is a cover story. We get cover stories everywhere. Innocent sounding explanations to write off far more malevolent and nefarious things. Mm-hmm. So it suits the controllers to have people think that this stuff is done just to be controversial. I think what's happening is these are massive energy trawling rituals that are making an energetic connection with the viewing public on an unseen level, feeding these images into the collective subconscious to have that kind of controlling effect and communicating what it is that these artists are a part of. This goes into the tenet of revelation of the method, placing the truth in plain sight, which I've spoken about many times before. These secret society occultists feel the need to let us know what it is they're doing and to give us an opportunity to understand what these agendas are and what these artists are a part of. For any of us to understand the true nature of it, you've got to have invested a bit of time and energy into researching symbols and what these things actually mean, sigils. And they know that the vast majority of the general public are clueless when it comes to this. They've not looked into it, and they have no idea what these symbols mean when they're flashed up on some big stage show with Madonna or Katy Perry or whoever. Nevertheless, we do have the opportunity to know what these things mean. The opportunity is always there for us to research based on our free will choices and decisions. We're back to free will. We can choose whether we look into these things or not. So the reason I believe they put a lot of this stuff out there is to give us an opportunity to know what's going on. And once they've done that, as far as they're concerned, in their sick, twisted, psychopathic mindset, they've let us know. They've communicated their true nature to us. If we then do nothing about it and the mind control works on us, they can no longer be held accountable for what manifests because we had the opportunity to understand and to choose not to be a part of it. This is how their tenet of revelation of the method works. This is why they do things like predictive programming. This is why they placed hundreds of depictions of what was going to come to pass on the 11th of September 2001 in movies and TV shows and music videos and record sleeves in the years and decades leading up to 2001. There were many, many opportunities to know what was going to come on 9/11. Now, nobody could be reasonably expected to interpret this stuff and decode it and watch a scene from a movie in the 1980s that shows the Twin Towers collapsing, for instance, and say to themselves, maybe there's some numerology in it as well, and say to themselves, hang on a minute, from this, I can see that on the 11th of September 2001, they're going to stage a false flag event where they blow up the Twin Towers and pin it on 19 Arab hijackers with box cutters. Nobody could be reasonably expected to come to that interpretation. But as far as they're concerned, they've still told us, and they've alleviated the karmic debt that they would otherwise have to repay by shifting the emphasis and the onus onto us. That, to me, is a very good explanation as to why there's symbolism everywhere, predictive programming everywhere. if people have a better explanation as to why this stuff is constantly inserted into stage shows, music videos, movies, TV shows, record sleeves, promotional pictures, etc., I would love to hear it. That's one that makes sense to me, and there's a lot of other researchers that see it that way as well.
Listen, Mark, in the early 90s, there was an alleged meeting in, I think, Los Angeles regarding the hip-hop industry. Would you tell us a little bit about that, and do you find it credible what has come out from that meeting?
Well, to me, it is credible, yeah. And it's a letter which emerged in the hip-hop press in certain publications quite recently. I think it was something like 2010. This letter is alleged to have been written by a person who was a music industry executive in the early 90s. And this person said that they had to come out with this information because they'd been living with it for the best part of two decades. And their conscience would no longer allow them to sit on it. They had to communicate this stuff to the world and get it out there. They chose to remain anonymous. When you hear the nature of the meeting that they were a part of, you can understand why they chose to remain anonymous. People have pointed out to me that it wouldn't be that difficult to work out who this individual was. If they're genuine, you could put a name on them and then their anonymity is gone. And that may well be the case. But still, I think if it was you or I coming forward with this type of information, we would probably choose to do it anonymously in the first place, knowing that people may well find out our true identity in due course, but you're not going to volunteer that information straight off. You would choose to do it on an anonymous basis, I would suggest. So this person states that in 1991, they were called to a meeting at a private residence somewhere in Los Angeles. And present at this meeting were representatives of all the big record companies of the time. And they all kind of knew each other from the industry. And they wheeled in a couple of individuals as guest speakers. And nobody knew who these two were. And the story goes that they announced themselves as being representatives of the US private prison industry. So prison for profit. And they said that they wanted to work together with these record companies to change the face of rap music. And they wanted to introduce a new kind of genre. They wanted to shape and mold the artists in a certain image and according to a certain template. And they wanted to change the lyrical content of rap music. And so they wanted to have MCs talking about petty crime lifestyles, basically glorifying criminal lifestyles. They wanted more and more records talking about gang banging, slinging crack, selling drugs, pimping hoes, you know, just living these debased criminal lifestyles. And the idea was that as more and more young, impressionable, stupid, as they saw it, fans of this music, predominantly young black males, would hear their heroes, their idols, espousing these kind of lifestyles. These fans would then seek to emulate the lifestyles of these rappers, and they would start to adopt these lifestyles for themselves. The inevitable result of that was that more and more of them would be getting caught by the police, stitched up with some charge or another, and the private prison industry would then have a constant flow of inmates to fill these jails. And the more inmates they put into these jails, the more money they stand to make from it, because it's all about profit. And you hear that the judiciary, the judges and the police and all these other aspects of so-called law and order are all in on it and all have personal shares in these private prison industries. So they all stand to make a profit from these places being full. And the idea is that the record companies and these representatives of the record companies would stand to have a personal investment in the prison for profit industry as well. So they would all make money off of this thing. So that's this person's explanation for why hip hop music at that time changed in the way it did. To me, it is entirely credible. A lot of people claim that the letter is a hoax, and that it can't be proven, and I guess it can't in terms of its authenticity. But I'm personally of the view that that's probably something that went down. It's entirely consistent with the way that the music changed. If you listen to so-called hip-hop now, and I no longer refer to myself as a hip-hop DJ because I don't want to be associated with the sort of acts that are held up as hip-hop artists these days. You know, the likes of Lil Wayne, Nicki Minaj, Drake, Rick Ross, Big Sean, 2 Chainz, Future, Lil Yachty, all these jokers, these clowns, to me and to the minds of many other people of my generation that remember better times and better days and better artists, these jokers are not hip-hop. They're absolutely nothing to do with the genre that went before. They bear no connection to it. What is being put out there as hip-hop so-called music these days is, to my mind, just satanic garbage and spirit-crushing, debasing filth. So the whole genre has just been steered off in a certain direction and bears no resemblance to what it used to be. And that has all been systematic. That's all been according to agendas. It's all been at the control of these corporations that, in my view, saw hip hop take off as this creative source of expression back in its heyday, when it was still meaningful, when it made sense, when the records made social commentary and put out meaningful messages, when it was an art form, when it had a spiritual component to it, when it was uplifting Black people and speaking to them and giving them a voice, all these positive aspects of that art form. These corporations saw that happening, realized that they had to get in control of it because, like I said earlier, they don't allow movements and trends to take off on their own. They don't allow them to be organic and natural. Or when they see something starting to become that, they immediately have to get involved and meddle in it and seize control of it and steer it off in their desired direction. So in my view, and again, in the view of many other researchers, many other authors that you'll speak to, many other hip hop fans that have just seen how the music has changed over the past couple of decades, it's in my thinking that it was steered off in a certain direction to sever any links with those spiritual, uplifting, positive, creative components that it once had. So it's now a very sad and debased caricature of its former self. That's not to say great hip-hop records aren't still being made and that there aren't brilliant, authentic artists out there, because there are. That's what my Sound of Freedom podcast is all about. I showcase these artists. And there's great uplifting message music that really resonates and speaks to us. But it's not the stuff you hear on mainstream radio. You'll never see one of these videos on MTV or BET or anything like that. And you won't see these artists packing out auditoriums and stadiums. You've got to really seek now for the good stuff. But it is out there. But anything you get on a corporate level now, these artists are absolutely controlled to a degree that never used to be the case. And it's just one of so many art forms that's just been corrupted and sent off in a certain direction.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that I focused on a lot is the Iran-Contras scandal, where the Bush dynasty and Clinton and so on were part of stealing weapons from the National Guard, transporting them in big army planes down to countries like Nicaragua, Honduras, El Salvador, and then the same planes going back was filled with cocaine, raw cocaine. And one of the pilots were Chip Tatum, the CIA whistleblower that I told you about before, who's now a personal friend of mine, this war on drugs was actually initiated and driven and directed by Bush Sr. himself, the senior, and Bill Clinton as the governor in Neenah, Arkansas, at one of the airports were Mina in Arkansas. And the thing is that this happened a few years before what we're talking about now, when this hip-hop meeting took place. But the whole idea was the distribution of the crack that started the whole, or the cocaine that started the whole crack epidemic in the U.S., were aimed at destroying minority, getting them to kill each other, getting them to die by overdoses, making the drugs so cheap that they could kill themselves. And then came this second layer of a conspiracy, I would say, where the private prisons owned by the same power structures that were part of the whole crack import thing, it came to the next level where this prison for profit industry started, and it just skyrocketed. I mean, the number of people incarcerated in the U.S. now is hundreds and hundreds of percent higher than anywhere else in the world. And there, at the moment, there's a very, very interesting documentary on Netflix called 13th that shows this whole machine of how they just chew up people from minorities mostly, that for nothing. I mean, they get caught by maybe their driver's license expired or something like that, and they're put in jail and they stay there without trials or with them. And the woman who has produced this documentary, she put forward numbers that I think it was 98% of all people incarcerated in the U.S. now has not had a trial. They have not had a trial because they have been told, you know, if you go to trial, the chances is that you will be put away for 30 years or 40 years or something like that. If you plea bargain, you can get it out after 3 or 5 or 8 or 15. But just imagine if you had a hotel instead of a prison, and you could have a fully booked hotel for the next 15 years, what kind of profit that would get you? You know, and now we're talking prisons with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of inmates. It's big business and driven by the same people.
Well, it's another aspect of social engineering, and they do it on so many levels. So you have Miley Cyrus videos that are aimed at sexualizing young girls and getting them turned on to sex at a far earlier age than should be the case. So, okay, check. You can tick that box. Then you have Will.i.am and Black Eyed Peas videos putting forward the idea that, hey, isn't it great, folks, that we can become like robots? You know, isn't technology fantastic? Take a microchip and a brain implant and you can be so much better than a human being. So transhumanist agenda, tick. Then you've got gangster rap thing, glorifying criminal lifestyles. Isn't it great? Isn't it cool to be a gangbanger? Isn't it cool to be a pimp and to be slinging crack? And then a bunch of young impressionable people are going to go down that route. So you get to fill a whole bunch of prisons. Tick. So they're ticking all these boxes, all these different aspects of social engineering. And it is ingenious. You know, you've got to take your hat off to them in so many ways in terms of how they've got every base covered. But an interesting thing about what you were saying about Chip Tatum flying a lot of this, the drugs in on behalf of the CIA, there's a connection into rap music there as well, because there was a guy called Ricky Ross, known as Freeway Ricky Ross. Have you come across this guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he was a big time drug smuggler that was a part of bringing in a lot of the crack cocaine into the United States. And he was working on behalf of the CIA, although he didn't realize it initially, but he came to understand that it was actually the CIA that was controlling the influx of all these drugs that were flooding all these inner city ghettos and affecting all these black communities. And he came out in recent years and sort of became something of an insider that spoke about how the CIA were involved in all this stuff. But he was an absolutely legendary figure in his heyday as a criminal, as a drug dealer. And he inspired the taken name of the rapper now known as Rick Ross. So he named himself after Freeway Ricky Ross, this legendary drug dealer, as a lot of them do. You know, 50 Cent, the rapper, named himself after a drug dealer. Biggie Smalls, Notorious B.I.G., took his character, the name of Biggie Smalls, from a movie, a blaxploitation movie in the early 70s. And Biggie Smalls was a drug dealer there. And there are so many others that have taken their name from these legendary figures, you know. But the interesting thing about the rapper known as Rick Ross is that he used to work as a correction facilities officer, basically a prison officer, before he reinvented himself as this drug dealer that talks all about how much crack cocaine he imports and this criminal empire that he presides over. The truth of the situation is his real name was Officer William Roberts, and he worked in a bloody jail, you know, and yet he's reinvented himself as this larger than life criminal kingpin figure that is a hero of hip hop now. And another big time drug smuggler that was working on behalf of the CIA was a guy by the name of Frank Lucas, going back to the 1960s. And this is the character that was portrayed by Denzel Washington in the movie American Gangster. And it turns out that one of the foot soldiers working in conjunction with Frank Lucas was Melvin Combs, who is the father of Sean Combs, aka Puff Daddy, P. Diddy, whatever other bloody name he calls himself this week, who was the mentor for the Notorious B.I.G., put him on the map, and is a very major key corporate player in, you know, the record industry to this day. And a lot of people seem to think that Sean Puffy Combs had a lot more to do with the murder of the Notorious B.I.G. in 1997 than we know about. Either way, he's a deeply suspect figure with, you know, some very dubious connections, I would suggest. But isn't it interesting how these connections go on for days? So Sean Combs' father connected to Frank Lucas, American gangster, who was involved in drug running for the CIA, as was Freeway Ricky Ross, who inspired the name of the rapper now known as Rick Ross, one of the biggest rap artists out there. You know, these connections just go on for days. It's just such an interconnected web. And it just reinforces this notion that the world is nothing like we thought it was, even last week.
But at all times, on all levels, please remember that it's compartmentalized by design so that people are not aware of the whole picture. They just know their little part. Even Chip, who is high up in the CIA and one of the top pilots, he had no idea they were flying drugs. It was just the one day when they had a bad landing, and one of these big coolers that they, so it was said plasma or something like that on the lid. But, you know, he thought there were medical equipment and plasma that they were flowing back into the States. They had a bad landing. It fell over and cracked open. And he saw, oh, my God, it's raw cocaine. What the hell is going on here? So he approached Oliver North, who was his boss, and said, what the hell is this? And Ollie North said, well, don't worry about it, son. You know, he was just laughing. He said, it's part of winning a war. You know, don't worry about it and so on. But at that point, he understood that, oh my God, I'm involved in something on a level that I had no idea about. So he approached William Colby, who was the director of the CIA, former as well, and said, what's going on here? And Colby said, listen, there's this Bush guy who's now big time coming in, who's going to take over all of it. And you need to get yourself some protection here. So get insurance, what he said, insurance, get as much hard evidence as possible and collect it. Otherwise, they will take care of you over the years. They will kill you. And Colby said, well, it's too late for me, but you still have the chance to save yourself. And then Colby ended up dead. Apparently.
Yeah, he decided to go out canoeing one day, didn't he, while his dinner was cooking on the...
He did, indeed. He did, as you do. So
happens every day.
Happens every evening, and so Chip did that, and that's the reason why he's still alive, I would say.
And Carl Colby's son, I know this is a story that you've told yourself, is the guy that is said to have delivered the gift of a pair of football boots to Bob Marley on his compound in Jamaica. And when Marley put on the boots to try them out, he cried out with pain because there was a copper wire inside one of these boots that had pierced his toe. And then I think it was about 3.5 years later, he just happens to die from a rare form of cancer, which had spread through his body from his toe. But I'm sure it's just a coincidence and nothing to worry about.
And Carl Colby as well was one of the main witnesses in the O.J. Simpson case.
That's
he was
right.
A neighbor of Nicole Smith. This is the thing with these key people that just pops up, you know, in different areas. Coincidence, yes, sometimes I'm sure, but some, you know, like when they add up and add up and add up, what are the chances? What
exactly.
are the chances?
Exactly. That's what people need to be asking themselves. And I just want to pick up on what you were saying about Chip Tatum not being aware that there was cocaine in these planes that he was flying and the compartmentalization so that not everyone is aware of what their role is. I was at the Open Minds Ireland conference in Waterford last month. And there was a presentation there from a guy called Terry Lawton on geoengineering chemtrails. And he was showing videos of these planes that spray the chemtrails. And you can see them in flight, and there's not a thing to be seen being emitted from the engines. And then at a key point, all of a sudden, you see all this chemical crap being spewed out. And it's absolutely obvious that something has just been activated and something's just been switched on to put this stuff out there. It makes a mockery of the idea that these are contrails, you know, water vapor, as deniers of chemtrails claim. They say, oh, it's just atmospherics, and when you hit a certain temperature, you see these water vapors, and at certain other temperatures, you don't. You know, absolute bollocks, because you can tell when these things have been activated. And Terry Lawton was suggesting that a lot of the pilots that go up into these planes are not aware of the fact that this stuff is going on. They don't even realize they're spraying it because it's being activated remotely from ground base in a lot of cases. So you have commercial jets, you hear that certain airlines, you know, they're spraying this stuff, and it's quite possible the pilots have no idea it's going on. And then you can have cargo planes and private planes, and they've been fitted with this stuff, and the pilots just aren't aware of it. So it's compartmentalization. Because often I look up at all this crap in the sky and I think, what kind of person would go up there and knowingly spray this stuff into the sky when their own families have to breathe the stuff in when it falls to Earth? And the answer to it is probably that they don't know, in a lot of cases, that it's going on. It's a need-to-know basis, and the pilots don't need to know.
And also, when did you see a rear mirror on a plane the last time? There are no mirrors. There are no way the pilot can see behind them. I'm a personal friend of another pilot, Willem Velderhof, who is a commercial pilot for 25 years, who was in total denial of this until one day he sort of woke up to the fact after 25 years that, what the hell? He hadn't even noticed. He was totally in that sort of like, yes, it's contrails because that is what we're being told, and there are even stamps showing it from NASA, you know, okay, these trails are totally natural and everything is natural. I still have friends who are commercial pilots who they're totally defending the official story instead of opening their eyes and saying, listen, what the hell is going on? Because just an hour ago, this sky was blue and now it's one white haze. What happened? You start filming it, you know, frame by frame, and I've had cameras put all over this. We live in I live in the south of Spain, so the sky is very clear here normally, so it's very easy to see these things. And then once you see it, there's no denial. So I see the chemtrails as an indirect blessing, because that's one of the things that once you see them, there's no going back.
And people just don't want to believe it, because if you acknowledge that chemtrailing is actually happening, it confirms that there are some very sinister people with very dark agendas who don't have humanity's best interests at heart, who are presiding over all this stuff ultimately. And it's the same with all things. If you accept that 9/11 was an inside job, the implications are devastating first off, because you realize it wasn't some militant Arab terrorists, but it was actually aspects of the US government and the intel services that conspired, and the mainstream media are in on it, because why have they not exposed it in all these years otherwise? That means all the big news corporations are a part of it as well. And people are horrified with the idea that the world can be this dark and this devastating. And a lot of people, it seems, just are not equipped to deal with that. And so they go into denial, they block it out, even when the evidence is obvious and is basically slapping them around the face, saying, look at me, they were still throw it out, defend the official version, dismiss anyone trying to tell them otherwise as a conspiracy nut job or crazy. You know, I understand that it's difficult for people to come to terms with these things. But like I said earlier, do you want truth or not? Do you want a better future for your children or not? Are you up to the job or not? You might have to let some things go. Again, we're back to that. You know, what type of individual are you? Are you one that is not having any of this and is prepared to do what's needed to head it off? Or are you someone that's just going to roll over, step aside, and let it continue? You know, I come back to this. I always come to this in my interviews, because we can talk about the problems for days, but we have to also talk about where we're going to go now and what we're going to do about it, having understood the nature of the problem. So I'm always back to the same place.
Yeah, I totally agree. We need to be part of the solution, not just pointing things out. But once you start seeing, I mean, we were talking about the size of the elite, how few they are in this small little group, but behind so much, it's just like the Wizard of Oz, and you know how this small, tiny little guy, look so big and sound so big, but it's not. I saw there was somebody made the comparison with, like, on a beach, one sand grain is the size of the elite compared to the whole beach. And I can't remember how big the beach was. The rest of the beach, that's us. And the size of, there's another one, fantastic little animated video on YouTube called The Tiny Dot, which also shows you the, I mean, it's an absolute joke. They're in the thousands. Actually, they're in the thousands. We are billions. And we're letting ourselves be controlled just because of these, the information that comes out to us via this black box in front of us or this screen, instead of looking next to it and saying, listen, this is what is going on. You know, there's so much fear porn being pumped at us through these black boxes or these screens and so on. So I would humbly suggest turn it off and find the information in other areas where you can choose what you find is believable, because it's only a matter of look at the evidence, look at it. There's a lot of disinformation out there, so you have to be aware of that as well, but look at it. The truth is fantastic in its purity and simplicity often. You know, it fears no investigation. As soon as somebody is trying to cover their butt by saying, well, these documents will be kept top secret and sealed for the rest of you for the next 20 years. Why would they do a thing like that after a mass shooting or a so-called terror attack? Why?
Yeah, the truth has no fear. That's why I say, if someone thinks I'm an MI6 agent or a dark occultist, go ahead and research. You have my blessing, because the truth is you will find nothing. And so I have nothing to fear, because there's nothing to find. That's truth.
Yeah.
And if you stand in truth, you have nothing to fear.
And that is why I love the truth. I really love the truth. Listen, Mark, we're coming to the end of the
show. Right, we'll do Paul McCartney next time, right?
We'll do that anytime you want. All right, there's so many different areas I would like to cover. But anytime you have the possibility to come back, feel free to just give me a shout, and I'll be most happy to do a second show.
But well, thank you, man.
Would you mind once again tell people how they can find you, how they can support you, what you would like to see happening in the near future, and how you see what is going to go, how it's going to go down or up or whatever?
Okay, so markdevlin.co.uk is the one-stop shop. If you want to email me direct, it's mark@markdevlin.co.uk. If you want to get a copy of the book from me direct, you can email me on that address. The book is also available via Amazon. I have a YouTube channel, Mark Devlin TV. A whole bunch of my seminars and talks and stuff are up on there. I'm not doing too many talks this year because I need to get this second book written. But next year, when the book is out, I'm going to be big time back on the conference circuit, back doing public talks, doing a whole bunch of radio shows. I'd be very happy to come back on your podcast and share some of the new information from the second book, because I've talked about the information that's in the first book. I don't know how many interviews I've done, maybe 50, 60. And rather than repeat the same old information, I would much prefer to be coming with some new information. So I'm looking forward to presenting some of that. At the tail end of my second book, I've written the last chapter already, because I'm an odd kind of guy in the way I put books together. I usually write the last chapter first because I know how I want it to end, and then I'll fill in the rest of it. So I've written the last chapter already. And in it, I'm making the point that I would rather hear people say to me, thank you for the information you've put out. I've looked at it. I have a clear understanding of the dynamics that are at play. And I'm now getting on the path myself by doing this. So I've started a podcast. I'm going out and doing some public talks. I've organized a meetup group to discuss these things. I'm organizing a conference. I'm making YouTube videos. I've started a blog site. I'm going to write a book. I'm going to go out in the street and talk to people about these things. I'm going to get on a platform in the park and raise these issues. I would much rather hear people say that than thank you for the information. I understand it all so much better now, and I've taken it deep within myself. it's great that people do take this information deep within themselves and it increases their understanding of what's going on. But if all you're going to do is sit on it, then nothing really changes. You need to be getting on the path. You need to be participating. You need to be making your own contribution in whatever way you can. Not everyone's cut out for writing books. I understand that. Not everyone is great at making YouTube videos. Not everyone is great at screaming through a bullhorn at some public event. But everyone can do something. You know, some people are great with computer skills. They can put websites together. I can't, but other people can. Some people are great at graphics and art, and they can communicate things that way. Everyone has some kind of gift, some kind of skill that can be put to use in raising awareness and raising consciousness in the way that needs to happen. So when you come to an understanding of all this information and the implications of it, you need to be getting involved in some way. And that's what I would say to people. And that's the way my next book is ending, just leaving people with that message that we can all contribute something. And if we all did, just imagine the impact. There's a phrase within hip hop that you hear in lyrics where they talk about each one teach one. Very simple. Everyone that comes to an understanding of truth, if they were to communicate that truth to just one other person and get them engaged, get them on the path, and then that person passes it on to just one more person, can you imagine the exponential growth of truth and raised consciousness that would occur in a very short period of time? That's all it would take, this critical mass that we need to reach. As you yourself said, there's a few thousand people controlling the lives of billions. We can reverse that process. It would only take a few thousand of us, or tens of thousands, or hundreds of thousands, to completely reverse that process, to completely negate their power, and to ensure that this never happens again in humanity. So, are we up to the job or not? You know, that's my question.
I want to just put in two little things. I saw there were some women in the States that they had a problem with police officers being very brutal in their area. What they did was baking cookies and going up and giving the police officer cookies. I tell you, these hardened guys that were very accused of being brutal, they melted. You know, some started crying because they were so used to being hated. They were so fearful of being killed, and that was one of the reasons they were so brutal. And just by getting these cookies, a conversation started, and they were starting to reach each other instead of fearing each other.
Yeah, you reach their humanity.
The power of a cookie. So no need for books and conferences. And for some people, a cookie can be the solution for a granny or someone else. And
there you go.
There's so many ways. It's just look at what is your talents? Is your passion? Can it fit in? How can it help to lift instead of pulling down? And also, what my experience is, the less people know, the more they will defend what they don't know. You know, that if you come with truths like this, they will say no for no for no, instead of saying, listen, that sounds absolutely crazy what you're saying. I'm going to look into it and make up my own mind. So I would ask the listeners and the viewers here, please do that. You know, if all of this has, if you're still here after 2 hours, fantastic, because that shows that you have an open mind, even though many of these things might have sounded outrageous to you. Do your own research. It's out there. You can find it. It's not difficult anymore with the internet. So with those words, I want to thank you, Mark, and really for taking this time. And is there anything you would like to end with?
Yeah, no problem, man. Thank you for inviting me. It's been a good conversation. I'm not doing many of these this year, so it's good for me to kind of, you know, keep in the right vein and be putting these messages out, because last year I spent the whole year just talking about this stuff, and I've had a bit of a break from it. So it's good to kind of revisit it now, and I've reassessed a few things in my mind. I would just say to people that there is a reason why you're alive in these times. Of all the times in human history that you could have incarnated into this reality, you're here right now. And that won't be by accident. That would have been a choice that was made by your higher self in spirit, soul, form. we're getting into spiritual, metaphysical matters here, and we better not take it too far, or we'll be here for another 3 hours. But I usually like to touch on these things in my interviews, because what we're dealing with here is not just this apparently physical reality, this real world situation in which we find ourselves. There are deep spiritual implications to all this that go right to the very heart of the true nature of reality and the true nature of who you are and what you're doing here. So, like I said, we all have a free will choice to make in these incredible times. This generation of adults right now will determine which way the future of humanity goes, whether we head towards freedom or whether we get locked down into tyranny and slavery. Which way it will go is down to us on a collective basis and our free will and the choices that we choose to make. So people need to remain mindful of that and make the right choice, choose the right side, and don't squander the incredible opportunity that your soul has been given through being born in these times over and above all others.
Well, well said. I want to just add, and what I normally say is that the one you've been waiting for is you. That's it.
That's it.
With those words, thank you so much, Mark, and all the very best with your book. It's going to be amazing to read it once it's out there. So I just want to let you know, anything I can help you with along the way, just let me know. And stay strong and in balance. And can I ask, finish with one quick question? I know you're a father. How do you deal with your children watching these type of videos, music videos that are ongoing now? Have you got a way to deal with that? Do you try to stop them from watching them, or do you tell them what to look out for or why it's there?
I have started getting through to my 8-year-old daughter about certain things. I can only consider that my job is to undo a lot of the programming that I know my kids are going to get. They're going to get it from school. They're going to get it from watching videos. They're going to get it from television. I could have a blanket ban on laptops and television and tablets in the house and say, you're not watching pop music videos. But because all their friends do, I think that would only bring about a form of rebellion where they would be all the more determined to watch this stuff. And I think that could backfire and come and bite me on the arse. So I think a better strategy is to try and control it and to try and get through to my girls and reach their humanity, reach their intelligence, and tell them that there are people and groups out there that are trying to harm them. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest about it. That's the truth. We want to shield our kids from disturbing things that are quite unpleasant. But at the same time, we do need to be speaking the truth to them. And so it is important for kids to realize that there are people out there that want to harm them and aren't out to help them. And so I do talk to my daughters about this. And as the years go on, as they get older, as they get more capable of understanding things, I'll communicate more and more stuff to them. That's just the responsibility of a switched on parent, I feel. And it's an ongoing process.
Thank you so much for that advice. I think it can help a lot of parents. With those words, hasta la vista and best of luck.
Thank you, brother. All the best.
Thank you so much for listening to Light on Conspiracies, the place where truth and love transcend the darkness. Take care and see you soon.
To learn who rules over you, simply find out who you are not allowed to criticize.
Coup d'etat in slow motion. Connecting the dots between the assassinations of Swedish Prime Minister Olof Palme, JFK, Robert Kennedy, and John Lennon. Now available on Amazon and lightonconspiracies.com. Coup d'etat in slow motion.